The most popular spring break destinations this year are in Florida and Mexico, but for nearly two decades, Atlanta was one of the hottest places to party in the country. It started as a picnic, but the annual celebration called Freaknik grew into a cultural phenomenon that helped build hip-hop culture. Some have called it hip-hop's Woodstock. Here's rapper Killer Mike.
Every generation has a Freaknik moment where they come just to have some fun and they around and find freedom. Welcome to Atlanta.
A documentary called Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told, debuted on Hulu this week. It charts the rise and fall of Atlanta's most infamous street party. NPR's TV critic Eric Deggans has some thoughts. Hi, Eric.
Hey, I imagine there's some older folks who are looking at this footage, wondering if they're going to see themselves doing something.
Doing something they never wanted their
they didn't
parents
know,
to know
like
about.
Back in the 80s, people were going to be taking camcorder footage that would wind up in a documentary, but here we are.
So you and I have heard about Freaknik a lot, but I imagine there's some people who've never heard of it before. What does this documentary tell us about the beginnings of this party?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I was in college in the 80s, and I knew about Freaknik when it was a hugely established party. What I didn't realize was that it started in the mid-80s as this event that was put on by folks who were at historically black colleges. And they wanted to kind of create an event in Atlanta that could be a haven for kids from historically black colleges who wanted to have fun, be surrounded by their culture and people like them on spring break. One of the things that we experienced, at least I experienced at that age, was if you went to a place like Daytona Beach, which was popular, where black people were in the minority, you didn't know what kind of reception you'd get. Freaknik gave people a place where they could be surrounded by their own culture and people that they loved and things they understood and kids just like them. And then it just grew. It became, you know, thousands of people started to show up. And then it grew even larger to draw people who weren't even in college. And that's when it got so big that it got unmanageable. And the documentary charts the course of that.
And that's when the documentary marks a turn in the environment. Many of the women who said Freaknik allowed them to own their sexuality also say a predatory element started to creep in. Here's Sharon Toomer, one of the original Freaknik founders.
Once I saw definitively the degradation of women, I had reached my fill with Freaknik. And there was no coming back from that.
So how truthfully does the documentary handle this?
Well, I they're honest about the fact that there were some well-known incidents where women got sexually assaulted by groups of men. Like, the way the documentary unfolds is it starts out talking about how much fun it was and how young people were coming to this place and they were looking to hook up and they, you know, and then it began to take a turn. It implies as people who were not college age began to come. When it really got out of hand was you know, the sense that there were these sort of public mass groping incidents. And that is just horrific to hear about and to imagine happening. I always thought there was a sort of weird underbelly to Freaknik where, you know, women were objectified.
Yeah.
And indeed, you know, Luther Campbell from Two Live Crew, renowned for having a rap act that talked a lot about sex, talked about how he brought the freak to Freaknik by, you know, bringing in those elements and sexualizing the women a lot.
So Freaknik really only lasted 13 years or so. There's now a festival in Atlanta that's called Freaknik, but most of the OG folks say it's not near to the same thing as the original. And I wonder what the documentary says about Freaknik's lasting legacy.
Well, what it says, it does a really great job of charting how Atlanta began to emerge on the national stage as a major city, and particularly a major city in black culture. And then all these major rap artists from Atlanta, you know, they always had struggled to get respect in between the artists that were coming out of New York and coming out of L.A. And so you hear about Outkast's early days. You hear about Jermaine Dupri's early days. These guys were able to reach thousands of consumers just by handing out you know, their mixtapes and people bumping them in their cars as they were hanging out and partying. The pundit Mark Lamont Hill talks about how a celebration of Black joy is really important, and that's what Freaknik provided. Let's listen to a quote from the doc.
We need Freaknik. We might not need the name Freaknik. We might not need the same city or the same location, but we need Black joy. We need Black culture. We need spaces for us to unwind and to connect and to bond, and not on the internet.
Definitely not on the internet. Not just on the internet, let's put it that way.
That's NPR TV critic Eric Deggans. Eric, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you.